Blog Talk Radio.
Well, all right, we got a fun show this week. First of all, I'd like to welcome a guy that is well known in the Portland area and around the country for just really keeping up on the Oregon basketball scene, the Portland State Vikings, who are red hot right now. So if you want to know about Portland State, this is the guy to talk to, and they're just doing extremely well. Coach Barrett Peary really, really stepping it up down there with the Vikes. Greg Crawford, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy holidays. Happy Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, May Day. We always are jumping ahead, right, Jim?
Exactly. With basketball, you always got to be a few months ahead of the game, or else someone's going to eat your lunch there. So I was going to just check in with you, and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you too, Greg, and good luck with your golf game. I know now is not the best time maybe to be golfing, but you can probably do something to work on your putting in the living room or something like that, maybe. But I wanted to get in touch with you. First of all, I know that there's lots to talk about with Portland State, I want to start with Oregon Ducks, just because, I mean, they were in the Final Four this last year. We've talked about them since that time, but I really want to get your feel for this whole new team. They've got a real new team, a lot of talent, and it's interesting how they've come together. It's very typical of a Dan Altman team to sort of come together, over the course of the season and put it together. What's your take so far on Oregon?
I think they're an interesting group to watch, Jim. I'm not sure. Of course, they're not at the level of last year. They're not going to be a Final Four team. They're very young. The reinforcements are coming over the summertime. And I think next year, again, they've got a very good chance to be a Final Four team with that recruiting class that's coming in. But for this year, I think we've got to think back. And they when they played with the big guys in the TK80, they lost to, both Connecticut and Oklahoma. And they lost pretty good. And, and then they've had a soft schedule. They're 10-3. They appear to be playing some pretty good basketball right now. And I think they catch a real break the way they open the season at home in the Pac-12 with Utah, then Colorado. Utah Friday, Colorado Sunday. Then on the 5th, I believe they play the Beavers in Corvallis. So they're young. A lot's going to depend on Peyton Pritchard, I think, how much he can contribute. And, of course, now it looks like Kenny Wooten's going into a starting position. Just a matter of time. He's an incredible shot blocker. Set range, very accurate shooter. He's going to be a big star, one of the best stars ever in the Duck basketball program, in my opinion.
He's really just blowing up. I mean, it's amazing. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this, except for maybe Robert Upshaw up in Seattle with the Huskies a few years back, who was just had unfortunately some personal problems and health issues. But right now, Kenny's got 41 blocks, in 13 games, and he's just running away with the blocks. Title for the Pac-12, maybe even possibly a record-setting year as far as block shots. And it's not like Oregon hasn't had shot blockers. I mean, they had probably the three of the top five shot blockers last year in the conference. And the year before, they had a couple, three of the – and look at what Jordan Bell's doing right now with the Golden State. I mean, they've had some great bigs. But Kenny Wooten's right in there. They haven't lost a ton with bringing him in there. He's obviously playing, not as many minutes as you'd think with how productive he is. He's only putting in 20 minutes a game. Pritchard's leading the team in minutes right now and having a solid year, as you'd expect, leading the team in scoring and taking care of the ball real well. Not quite as well as some of the point guards of the past, though. He's got 4.6 assists per game, which is pretty good, but three turnovers a game is, it's been a challenge. But, I mean, they've been playing some good teams. And for gosh sake, I mean, Greg, they played Trae Young. And, we don't have to talk about how good he's doing this year. with Oklahoma, and UConn also is really no joke. They're just a solid program there. But Elijah Brown is a I believe he's a senior, and as is Mikhail McIntosh. They got some grad transfers. So there's some veterans on this team. What do you think about Elijah Brown right now? He's averaging 13 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a little bit better taking care of the ball than Peyton. When shooting 94% at the free throw line, what do you think of Elijah Brown's contributions so far?
I think Elijah Brown's we're going to be talking about him a lot in February. I think it's taken him a while to get used to the system. You kind of alluded, Altman runs a different type system than a lot of people are used to. It's a successful one. A lot of cutting straight towards the basket. It's a different type of offense, but once he gets used to it, I think he's going to be good. And I like the fact he's a good three-point shooter. You know, the Ducks, we don't have to remind too many people. They make their free throws last year. They easily could have been the national champion back there in the Final Four. And I know one thing, Jimmy, I mean, you pick yourself so bright on all topics of basketball, but they're about even statistically what they did last year, but with one exception, the three ball. It's unusual for an Oregon team to be shooting 37% from the threes. They're usually in the 40s somewhere, and that's kind of been their bread and butter, along with, as you said, the block shot and rebounding. So that's got to pick up for them to be successful. I still think they're going to be an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, well, Troy Brown is a pure freshman, so there's your youth. But I think he's one of the – he's a five-star guy and a guy that's really impressive. He's got a huge upside. I mean, there's a good chance that his learning curve is so strong that he'll put himself into the draft this year. But we'll see what happens with that. But he's putting up pretty good numbers. He's leading the team in rebounding at 8 rebounds a game. He's kicking out 3 assists on top of that, shooting 79% from the free throw line for a pure freshman. That's real impressive, as you well know, Greg. And then he's putting up a lot of minutes. He's the second leading guy on the team in minutes after Pritchard. So he's doing pretty well. Obviously he's a story. Paul White's been a good story. He's been averaging a double figures as well and good numbers all across. Pretty much nothing really to point out that's not going well for Paul White is another transfer. You mentioned Wooten. I mentioned Mikhail McIntosh, who again is a grad transfer also. So there's a nice rotation there. Victor Bailey, Roman Sorkin. It's a team that's got a lot of guys that can contribute right there. I've named off 8. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there. What have you noticed about those guys individually and collectively this year that you think is going to – let's just start with the positive, and maybe if you can think of anything that's really going to maybe hold them back a little bit.
Sure. Good question. I think the positives are they're learning how to play together. That's the – Altman kind of relies on that extra pass. Often, even on the fast break, he wants that extra pass as a coach. That's why he's so successful. Offensively, I think they're okay. I think they're probably going to need to do a little better job rebounding. And I think, quite frankly, if I had to, somebody asked me one word to analyze the Ducks, I think they've underachieved. I guess that's one word still. We haven't changed that word yet to 2, like all the others. But
yeah, well, that's a word that works well for a lot of Pac-12 teams in November and December, and then they end up really looking pretty good in February and March, and maybe don't get the great seeding like some of the teams around the country based on them stumbling a lot. And they've had a couple stumbles early here, which is unfortunately characteristic of Pac-12 programs. But this year it seems like the Ducks have kind of got a late start,
Yeah, they're 10-3, Jim, and 1-5 straight, but I agree with you. I think they are getting a little bit of a late start. The Connecticut game does bother me because Connecticut, since the PK80, has not played that well. and they kind of handled Oregon pretty good in that PK-80. And, you know, I felt, so I don't know how you feel about it, or all your great guests all the time, but I've gotten, as I get older here, I start looking a little bit more at the RPIs, especially at the end of December. And I noticed the Ducks, you know, they're 96th in the RPI, so
it's
they're
be
used
hard,
to
yeah.
being up in the 40s, 50s, 30s, so they're going to have to jump that a little bit.
Yeah, well, they got a challenge to go, but I'm not that worried about it. If I'm a Duck fan, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic right now about how things are going to be going. Right now, they're on a roll. They've won. I can't remember how many in a row right now, but I think it's like five or six in a row right now.
Five in a row.
Yeah. So and again, losing to a team like Connecticut. I mean, let's be honest, Greg. They were the national champs. Been national champs. They've been an elite level program for, gosh, 20 years. So I don't think that's going to look so bad. Losing to Oklahoma, you know, not so good, but still with a guy like Trae Young, that also doesn't look that bad. The one team that they lost to that maybe does look not so good is that Boise State loss at home. But, you know, really and realistically, Boise State's a program that constantly puts together a solid team really over there with Leon Rice. So I wouldn't think that they really have a bad loss. And if they keep up with the development, the game that I would be scared of if I was Altman, and I'm sure he's well aware of it, is Utah, because they're playing pretty well right now. And even though they're on the road, that's a very disciplined, balanced, well-put-together program, that's a team that could beat them at home, and that would certainly hurt them. You know, they're doing pretty good. Let's switch over to the Beavers real quick, if you could. What's your take on what's going on there this year?
Well, you know, I thought they would be a little bit better than they are, but you know, I guess they're kind of recovering, getting together as a team. You know, they've got the brothers are playing well. Dreams Tinkle is playing well. I think the key really to them, Jim, and I know you watch closely too, is how Eubanks plays. He's got to have a good game pretty much every night out, and he's still been a little consistent. I mean, I saw him play 2 years ago against my alma mater in high school, Cleveland High School, famous high school in Portland, and I thought, yeah, he's not going to be that great. But in fairness, I just saw him one game, and he played pretty good at Oregon State, but he's been a little inconsistent, but I think he's got the potential to be a star. And
he does.
You know, the Thompson brothers are good. Oregon State, they're 8-4. They were playing real well, and then they ran into Kent State, lost to them, kind of stopped their. I think they had a 5-game winning streak too. So we'll see what happens. I think Oregon State, to describe them best, to a mystery team. And I don't know what Oregon State team's going to show up.
Yeah, they've beaten some teams, but I'll tell you what I think. I think that they're going to be fighting it up with UW and Wazoo and Cal. And a lot of people think Stanford, but I have a feeling Stanford's going to be better than what they are right now. So I think they're going to be fighting it out for that ninth spot with some of the bottom-end teams in the Pac-12. As much as they really have improved their overall talent by bringing in the younger Thompson kid and getting back Trae Tinkle, I think they got more talent. They still seem to be a little thin and maybe just a year away. They still need to bring in some more talent. But the good news is all those kids are back. So I think Wayne Tinkle is going to make some noise again, not this year, but next year. And I think he's got a chance to do that again. So, and again, keep in mind, he was the first guy to get him back in the NCAA tournament. So back in 2016. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the Oregon State, but I see some good things there. What do you think about these Thompson brothers as running the backcourt without Ja'Cory McLaughlin now that he's gone? And do you have any news on Ja'Cory?
You know, I don't have any news on him. That was sort of a real kind of surprise to me. You know, I thought he was a very good player. I don't know. I never knew much about him personally, except he's a very good basketball player. You know, the Thompson, you know, in a way, it's really kind of a tough situation there at Oregon State. And I would certainly want to play for my father. You know, if I had the opportunity, would have been a Division I player. My dad would have been a Division I coach. But you got the Thompson brothers there, their dad's an assistant coach. And then you got Trey Stinkle, their dad's the head coach. I'm not always a big fan of that, personally. And I'm not seeing any problems involved with it. I'm sure there are not. But I'm just saying, I think sometimes things can develop there that maybe wouldn't develop if that were not the situation.
Unless you're Press and Pete Maravich, for those of you who are at least 60 years old. But then, that's a whole other story. But that was an incredible story, that's for sure.
How'd you bring him up?
Because I saw him play on television. I try to rub it in the face of all these know-it-all basketball guys that think that the best player of all time was somebody who played in the last 2 years. No, Pete Maravich, unbelievable. So at any rate, going back to what's going on with Oregon State, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think McLaughlin he was getting starters minutes. He was there for six games. He averaged 26 minutes a game, which was basically one of the starters. Fifth on the team as far as minutes. He just wasn't shooting the ball very well. He seemed like although he was making his free throws, that was the thing he was real strong at, and he was taking care of the ball, sort of. I mean, he did have kind of a bad assist-turnover ratio, really. It wasn't all that great. Kind of having sort of a sophomore slump. But keep in mind, this guy was a starting point guard on a Pac-12 team as a freshman last year. So I think it's a big loss. I don't understand, you know, what the advantage was of him being gone. He must have done something. I have really no inside information, but we can address that at a later time. I mean, obviously there's the Big Four, but after that, you got to wonder, there's some tough kids. There's Collins and Manuel and Rakusevic. There's some guys, Seth Berger has been starting for him. He's kind of a glue guy, doesn't shoot the ball well, but he can defend and cause, you know, disrupt and such. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what to expect from them. Like I said, I think they're kind of sort going through a little bit of an adjustment. But do you think that I'm wrong about that?
No, I don't think at all. I think you're right on. And I think there's one thing here that Jim, that, I mean, not many people talk about, but the people in Seattle certainly can relate to this, your hometown. But I think we kind of underestimated the value of GP3, Gary Payton 3, when he played for the Beavers. I mean, he didn't get a lot of notoriety because I think people thought, well, he's getting pumped up because of his dad. He was a much better player than anybody gave him credit for. And when he left, that was a big hole to fill.
You bet. He's one of the all-time great Oregon State sort of, you know, tough, dynamic defensive players. And, you know, you look down through the years and they've had a few really good ones, and he was certainly one of them. But tell me a little bit now about your Portland State Vikings. I'll tell you what, I am so impressed by Barrett Pierre. I've always been impressed by him when he was at CSI and what he was able to do with developing guys and just being a solid coach at that program at that level. And then he did a lot in the junior college ranks. He's a guy that really knows how to find players, has a lot of contacts out there to get players. And he's just putting it together just incredibly on the court. You're a guy that knows Portland State Vikings. What's your impression?
They're really good. You know, I think one thing, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Tyler Gebbing did a great job there.
He really did.
Some circumstances that were just, you know, unbelievable. Last in the country at APR, and I told everybody, they looked at me real funny. I said, it's going to take 5 to 7 years to dig out of this hole. And it literally did. And Tyler did a great job. And Barrett's come in and just got some different type players. Got a few of the old players. The Candy Kid is tremendous. He can hit a shot with a person in his face. Anything. But, you know, the funny thing is, they're seeing behind the scenes that I doubt if you could going around the country. Even the top basketball people named two out of the five starters for the Vikings. We named two players on their team, let alone. And, you know, the interesting thing is you ain't playing any home games this year. You're playing at Lewis and Clark, which is a good facility, but they don't have their home court. And I saw a deal by John Miller, you know, he really covers San Jose Mercury News. He had a deal, I think, today, like a tweet or an article, I guess it was, that he said that, you know, it's part of it, overcoming Pac-12 basketball, losing to the Big Sky. Well, obviously, I've never really thought John Wilner knows much about basketball, and that kind of proved it, because Portland State's a better team than Cal and Stanford.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a game for them to lose to. They beat them both, and they're still a better team. And they
well, I mean, they're a great team. They almost beat Duke. And they didn't almost beat Duke. Duke pulled away at the end. But I'll tell you what, they took a big piece out of them in the first half. Let me tell you, that was a heck of a game. I mean, they were right in that game and for most of that game. And you're talking about, you know, guys that weren't even two-star recruits going up against, you know, almost all top 20 recruits. I mean, just incredible talent there at Duke, and just an incredible job of motivating those kids to play hard and really fight. And that was a really wonderful game to watch. And then they turned around and lost again, you know, but only by a bucket to Butler. Was it Butler or Xavier?
Yeah, it was Butler.
Butler, I mean, it's, you know, and but just by a bucket to them, that was real disappointing. They should have won that. Then they turn on beat Stanford. They beat Cal. I don't know if I'm really ready to tell you that I think that that Cal and Stanford are horrible teams. I really just think that Portland State's just more ready to go to battle. I mean, I think Stanford, now that they got back Sheffield coming back here shortly, and they got back Pickens. He's just been kind of warming out of his – and that's been his problem, is his shooting's been kind of off because he's been sitting for so long, but he's a heck of a good shooter. I think Stanford's actually, when all said and done, going to have enough talent to be a sort of a middle-of-the-road Pac-12 program, a little head, just a shoulder head, maybe a little bit, a couple of inches ahead of the teams I mentioned before that are in the bottom third of the conference. I think they might be able to squeeze into the NIT or one of those kind of things, maybe with a couple of wins or something like that. So, but there's so much talent in the Pac-12. I mean, 1 through 8 is just brutal, you know, in Pac-12. So I think it's going to be sort of the of all the have-nots. I think Stanford's got a shot, but so that's a really big win that they beat Stanford. And then this Cal game, to go on the road and play at Haas, I mean, that's a tough place to play, you know?
Yeah. They literally, the only way you can describe the Cal game was they embarrassed them and destroyed them. You know, I mean, that's just
exactly right.
That game was over at halftime. And I guess, you know, it's going to be interesting, Jim, in that they've had this play that their RPI is 42. That's pretty darn good. Probably the highest RPI a Portland State team's ever had, even the ones with Bone that went. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because they opened the Big Sky play on Thursday, I believe it is. They're at Sac State. Then they come back on the road. Then they come back and play Eastern and Idaho on the road.
Mm-hmm.
3 games on the road to start with. If they come back from that 3-0, then they got to be the favorites to win the Big Sky.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Big Sky is no joke. You know, I saw that Montana team against UW play them. I mean, basically it was one of these games that was settled on the last shot of the game, basically that kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, realistically, that's a good, strong team. And Idaho was the favorite going the season. And I love the way they look. They destroyed the Cougars. I mean, just destroyed them. I mean, there's some good teams in that Big Sky. This Big Sky is real exciting. I mean, I know I'm a basketball nut, and most people don't even think much about Big Sky. They're sitting there thinking about Kentucky and Duke and whatnot. Then there's the people that are slightly nerdier like us that care about the Pac-12. But the Big Sky, you know, I think honestly, it's going to be there's not going to be a dull game in that Big Sky this season. It's just there's a bunch of teams that really want to fight. You know what I'm saying?
No, Weber's always great. Randy Ray is an outstanding coach. All you got to do is look at Damian Lillard, what great coaching he got there. And then you know, North Dakota, and you know, it's kind of interesting. The Northwest, I was thinking was going to go on with you, Jim, just a little figure that probably a lot of people don't realize. There's only been one team from the Northwest that's ever won the NCAA championship. That was 1939, the Tollfers in Oregon. Gonzaga obviously played for it. Seattle played for it. And Oregon State was in the Final Four. And when you really look at the history of Northwest basketball,
Huskies made the Final Four with the Bob Oubregs.
It produced the best pros with Seattle. They probably had the best pros. When you look at all the people that played for them, that played in the pros, so it's real interesting, and it's kind of neat to see this wave of pretty good teams coming, and the Pilots are going to be really good next year.
You know, I'm really excited about the Pilots, too, and I wanted to ask you about them. And I know we're running out of time here. I really wanted to know because I really like those. I really like Terry Porter's style, and I really like the way his kid's looking. And he's got another kid on the team, too, that really plays well. And they've still got the good connections to get the overseas players. And it seems like they're really starting to kind of put that team together. I mean, this year's been a little bit of a struggle, but to be honest with you, I think that that's another program that really is interesting to watch. The WCC is so hard, though. You know, it's just so tough. What are you thinking about the Pilots this year?
They're going to probably struggle a little bit more, but they're going to be pretty good next year, get a year under them. A player that everybody needs to watch is their little point guard, Shaver. I think he's not many people talk about him. I watched the Pilots play, you know, forever. I will say this, that he's the quickest player I've ever seen at the University of Portland. And he's going to do some real damage. Because the WCC, when it really comes down to it, it's, as you know, Jim, it's kind of a muscle league. So when you get the guy that's really quick, not a lot of people can handle him. He's going to be – you got to watch this. You know, the Pilots will be good. They got to keep improving. And they got to win some league games, I think, and a couple on the road to get the confidence, going into next year when they'll have a year under their belt with all these young guys and this great recruiting they've done with Bob Cantu. And Ben Johnson and Kramer Kibbutz in there on Terry's staff. And, of course, anybody that questions Terry Porter as a coach, just go talk to Hall of Fame. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame easily.
Sure.
Terry Spoelstra, he'll tell you what a great
coach. Oh, Terry's incredible. And like I said, his son Franklin Porter is doing really well, shooting 47% from three. Marcus Shaver, like you mentioned before, all you need to do is look down to Arizona State and Remy Martin to know what a guy that can really move the ball around and really get up and down the court and cause trouble like that as a smaller player can do for a program. I mean, he's got energy for sure. And, McSwiggin's really a solid player. You know, they got Marcus Tyson is a really strong shooter, and he's the veteran there. And there's some good players. They're fun to watch too. Definitely, they get the Porter brothers and Terry Porter and such. And it's gonna be a fun year. And the WCC obviously is gonna be a little bit tougher on the top of the league. With Gonzaga is a little bit down this year from what they were last year, obviously. And Portland might surprise some teams. And there's some quality teams in that league right now with BYU and St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and it's going to be fun to watch. You're lucky in Portland, you get to see all those teams come through town.
Well, we're going to be lucky this week too, Jim, with the Les Schwab Invitational. Oak Hill is back, Martin Day is here, and then Thursday, the great in-rank tournament at Clackamas Community College. It's always loaded. and they beefed up the field this year. Incredible. So we are going to see a lot of great college basketball, and high school basketball, and basketball.
You bet.
And now Under Armour is buying every building in town. So we're all going to be the Steel City USA.
You know, and don't forget about Brandon Roy and his Garfield Bulldogs. I mean, he has probably more talent 1 through 8 than he had last year at Nathan Hale when he had that really top heavy squad with the Porter brothers and PJ Fuller, who's now on his Garfield squad. So they got, instead of, you know, 3 incredible D1 players and a bunch of guys that really aren't D1, he's got like 8 D1 guys 1 through 8, and they're all really good. That's going to be a really interesting team to watch too with Garfield, and they'll be down there. So, well, it's great to have you on, man.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I know you're short on time, but I'll tell you, for all the people who love Brandon Roy like myself, his number needs to be retired immediately by the Blazers.
By the Blazers, absolutely. He should be retired by the Blazers. And they're going to be retiring Isaiah Thomas's number here up at UW this year. And we're going to be bringing on a guy we're going to talk to some UW here from Andrew Grinacher from North City Hoops, up here AAU guy, that's going to be giving us a whole bunch of information about his take on UW and AAU. And we're definitely going to need to be going over these topics. And Greg, it's just so fun to talk to you as usual, man. You know your stuff, and I want to have you sooner than later again on the show.
Anytime. I'm always happy to be on with you. Merry Christmas once again. I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everybody around the world. And I hope your good friend David Rice, who's doing a great job as an assistant at University of Washington, is listening tonight too. So I'm very, very happy for the Huskies. They're playing great.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, bless you, Greg, and I'll see you soon.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
You bet. Take care. Is Andrew there?
I'm here.
Andrew, so great to hear from you, Coach. You're with North City Hoops, and that's an AU program that's been around. Tell us a little bit about North City, first of all.
Yeah. First, thanks for having me on, and Merry Christmas to you, and Happy Holidays.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so we started North City AAU actually back in 2010, and it came out of kind of an interesting story. Some people in the area may know Mike Lawson. He's actually a basketball trainer in the area. Mm-hmm. He's trained some of the colleges, Seattle Pacific University, Northwest College, some other colleges in the area. And he has a lot of boot camp style training. And when I met him, I was coaching his son. And we kind of came up with this concept of bridging both that style of training with the AAU basketball scene, and have had a lot of success in seeing players not only improve their game from a skill and development standpoint, but getting stronger, which is usually one of the last components that comes along for kids that are dreaming of playing at the next level. Is they don't understand how much has to go into preparing their body physically for playing at that next level. And so we've kind of taken this approach of making sure that kids are having that time and putting that time in. And yeah, it's just been kind of organic growth. Started off with a couple teams there, like I said, back in 2010. And this last year we had 16 teams from fourth grade up through high school, and a little over 200 players taking part in the program. So we are very, very blessed with the success. And obviously that comes from having great coaches and great, as you're well aware, and these is a lot of the families and the parents that are involved with these kids play a big part in the success of everything there. But we're excited. We're mostly north. So our kids are mostly in the Snohomish County area. We do have kids that travel from Seattle up to where we are. We're practicing out of Jackson High School and Archbishop Murphy High School in the spring and the summertime. And we're excited for another season to get started here in March.
Well, you said the magic word when you said 200 kids. That means you got a big enough group where you can make this thing work and hopefully get this thing on the road and develop some teams. And that's really cool that you got that many guys involved and really doing it. And you know, as far as the training and the most important thing with AAU, you know, I don't have to tell you, but this AAU has gotten an awful bad name for a lot of good reasons. But the other side of it is that what you're really doing for these kids is really important. You're getting these kids a chance to maybe get into college and get some of their college paid for, and giving these parents something to you know as an incentive, because the process of college is so much is so hard and for a lot of people, and at the same time keeping these kids busy, keeping these kids going with good role models and good training as far as ethics and positive teaching of kids in sports is a really good thing in that regard, more than likely. But what's going on in the bad side of AAU, obviously, is being talked about all over the place. You got a bunch of lawyers right now trying to convince judges that it's okay to pay players, pay people's dads and pay people's coaches to get players to come to schools because they're benefiting them by paying them money under the table. I've never heard of anything more preposterous in my life, but that's the kind of world we live in right now, Andrew. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, and I think you've hit on a couple of things. I think that's definitely the two sides of sort of the AAU coin. I think in first the first side of the good side that you talk about, I definitely do think there are positives when you have a positive program that
and there's positive people like yourself that do it.
Yes, exactly, and we're blessed, like I said, to have really great coaches. You can't have a couple coaches if you're going to have several teams that can be those positive role models. But I think the other thing that comes into play is proper expectations with families and with parents and with athletes about where their potential is or where it's not. Yep. And I think that's where a lot of it starts with, and that, parents can pay to play AAU in basically any fashion. But making sure they're aware of going to Las Vegas or going to Los Angeles or going to Atlanta, but that there's a purpose to do it, or is it just to go to those places and play games? I think, those expectations need to be set about what's realistic for someone from you should be playing community college to junior college to Division III to Division II to all the way to major Division I basketball. I think just having those proper expectations is going to set up a lot, a lot of positivity and success in that regard. On the bad side of things, the Adidas, sort of scandal or the shoe thing that's kind of come down. Not totally shocked by it. I think there's a lot of people that are always trying to gain some kind of edge. And I think even after this, there's still going to be people that are trying to gain some sort of edge. I think it's making sure that you properly vet people out that you're working with, that your son or daughter is being coached by, that the program's affiliated with. I think that sometimes parents don't do as much as they can in looking into, maybe how some of that stuff's coming together. But it's a business. I mean, and I hate to say that, but the best example I have is we went down to the Anaheim Sports Center in July this past summer to play in a tournament to get in front of several Division I and Division II and Division III coaches. But there are hundreds of teams. The Vegas tournament that we were in, there was 1,100 teams that were in the tournament.
Sure.
And each one of those teams were paying $800 to play in the tournament. These are all – it's pretty quick math before you kind of figure out the scope and size of some of these things. And so, you got to have a good sense of why you're there and what you're there for in order to get the most out of it.
Well, they're paying $800 and they're also flying to Vegas or driving to Vegas whatever, what have you. And it costs a lot of money. And I mean, I don't know if I need to go over all the specifics of some of the methods that people are using to basically be involved in corrupt practices when it comes to AAU and recruiting. But my impression is that a large percentage of the people that do AAU are doing what you're doing, which is trying to provide a service to help people with their kids. And that's what college basketball should be, Andrew. And I'm just really sick and tired of listening to people think that college basketball should be something that you put on TV 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and sell advertising for and sell T-shirts and jerseys and win games at all costs, even if if you act like an idiot on the court. I mean, the bottom line is, truthfully, college basketball is good because kids get educated, and they get an education, and they make maybe a little bit of money. They learn something from the sport of basketball. But most of the kids that you're coaching, you know, I don't need to tell you this, are not going to play in the NBA. And they're, you
correct.
Know, and they're, and most of them are probably not even going to get a penny to play of their education paid for. Some of them will, you know, thank God. But the key thing is what they learn, the value of the lessons they learn, and the value of the impetus that they use from the motivation to play high school basketball, to keep their grades together, those kinds of things, those kinds of controls. Not only in basketball, but all sports, girls' sports. That's what's so great about Title IX to me, is it gives motivation for girls, not only boys, but girls also to work hard on their school, work to stay eligible to play the sport they love, and to stick around the gym as opposed to hanging around at the, you know, the park or whatever, or getting involved with drugs and alcohol, those kinds of things. I mean, the thing is, you know, sports are a good thing for the community, and I think that's important overall to talk about. And it's not just about, you know, winning. And that's why I'm so against the whole idea of paying players. I think the universities are in a unique position to provide academic help. If there needs to be less money in the pockets of administrators and, you know, marketing people, and more money in the pockets of students and players, it should be going to more time and more, you know, more years of being on a full ride so that they can get a real marketable degree. They have the ability to give these kids an education, and a better one than they end up getting. A lot of them in 4 years are so busy in the gym, they aren't able to really get that marketable of a degree, or even a degree at all, you know? So what do you think on that? I've been talking a lot here.
There's a lot. Yeah, no, there's a lot to unwrap there. I think one thing I do want to call it is there. You mentioned that, you know, a strong majority of the people that are doing AAU are providing those positive environments, and I think that's even more true within the Seattle area. I mean, Daryl Hammonds with Rotary, and Gary Ward with Northwest Panthers, and Jeremy Eggers with Friends of Hoop, and there are a lot of people that are doing it the right way. And I think we are lucky that in the Seattle area and the Puget Sound area, there are a lot of, you know, those positive programs to, and all these people know each other, and they're all rooting for each other. It's not a you know, my program versus your program sort of scenario, but I think with diving into your question about that, you know, paying, you know, players and going to the academic, I think where I struggle with is when you see the university or the school or the conference making money off the likeness of particular athletes, and then mm-hmm. having trouble saying that they have the ability to increase their daily or their weekly or their monthly stipend to help with their cost of living, or, you know, or maybe that doesn't go to the cost of living, that goes into the academic, you know, pool that you had talked about. But I think that's where it's a little hard for me to feel like they are have the best interest when you know that they are making that money off their likeness that maybe does not come back maybe as directly to them as maybe the athletes would like.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I kind of my model that I think is it should be, I think that men's basketball and football are the money sports. If you look at sure. you know, sport college sports, like you look at a business, like for instance a ballet. Okay, this is the ballet. The most of their money is made by Nutcracker at Christmas. Okay, then the rest of the year they do what they can do to put on other shows that ballet people are going to like. And that's the thing, is it's very similar to college sports. Most of the money is made by football and men's basketball. I think that they should maybe have a little different situation than the other sports that aren't what they call non-revenue sports. Some of them actually break even, like the UW. They've done really well with a number of Title IX programs. But the key thing is, I think that, you know, I think giving them more academic benefits, because the pressure is so high to keep eligible.
Right.
And then we can move into the Huskies, which I want to talk about with you. But the pressure is so high to work out and make practices and weight room and, you know, camps and all the things they got to do, that getting a marketable degree in 4 to 5 years is really hard. You're really an entertainer is what you really are. And on top of that, with a tremendous amount of pressure to improve while you're there, not just to do a job, but to learn a craft and do a job. And to put that much time into it and come up with, you know, you know, a degree that's not that marketable, it's not really fair for what amount of work they put in and how competitive it is to get one of those spots. You know, the thing is,
no,
yeah,
I agree
you can
with
go
that.
And play pro, but I think honestly, if you sign a letter of intent in D1, I think that this is the kind of responsibility that college should put up for people like this. You get to the point where you can get a D1 ride, letter of intent. I think you should be guaranteed 2 years full ride just for signing that letter of intent. If you get sick, you go to, no matter what happens, whether it's your fault or their fault, no, you should get 2 years just for getting to that point. If you make it through 1 year, I think you should get 4 year full ride. I think if you make it through 2 years, you should get 6. I think if you make it through 3,
well,
you should get 8. And I think
if
you make it through 4, you should get 10. These guys need to have something of benefit that this university can actually give them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting that you bring that up, because we had a situation where one of our players, Colby Kyle, he's a post player out at Monroe High School, graduate in the 2018 class. And he had a few different offers on the West Coast, UC Davis, Cal Poly. But then he had a couple Ivy League offers as well. And one of the things that actually attracted the family to those Ivy League offers was not only because it was an Ivy League, but that in the Ivy League, they don't have academic scholarships. So when you actually sign to go to school there, you sign as a student first. So there is no, you get some of that. They have, you know, aid and whatnot that help out, but it's not tied to your athletic, you know, sort of availability or you're playing on the team. And so that could be another way where, you know, you can position. I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of pressure on these kids to where, you know, the coach, and what happens when the coach leaves, you know, then suddenly they're not, you know, they're up in the air in terms of whether their scholarship is still there, their roster spot is still there. So, no, I agree with you. I think that's definitely one angle to provide some additional support for those players that are giving so much back to the program and the conferences.
They really are. And if you pay them, it just kind of creates a little bit more problems, I think. Maybe a little bit more cost of living stuff. But I think if you give them more academic and significantly more academic support, I think they walk away with something that's more positive. And I was thinking even something, if a guy says, look, I just don't want to go to college and I'm really a college guy, I want to, you know, go back to the farm, or I want to go back to here and work for my dad. Maybe they could even set us up a situation where you could, if you had years that they owed you of full ride scholarship, that you could transfer to your sister or your spouse or something like that. They need to have something that's, I mean, you look at academics as what they provide at these universities. The University of Washington is a really prestigious one. For one thing, it's a valuable, it's really hard to get into these programs, you know, to begin with for anybody. But the thing is, it's kind of like in my business, in the entertainment business, you're playing in a place that is a restaurant. They can give you a meal for cheaper than it would cost coming off the street and paying what's the price that's on their menu. And that's kind of similar to what it is for in a school. It's cheaper, I think, for them to provide more academic benefits. I think that's one thing that really does make sense. And if you just don't need college, you say, look, I'm a pro. I just want to come here for 1 year. And just, you know, I don't see a problem with just going straight to the MBA. I don't know. This one and done thing is – it's just kind of, I don't know, I'm not sure what the heck's purpose it serves other than providing a, you know, a little bit more of a easier route for NBA scouts to have a year to where they don't have to pay to watch guys play, you know. I think that's about all it is. And
sure,
it's,
yeah.
I don't know what good it does.
Some of the talent evaluation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's, if they could be there for longer than 1 year, then I think there's some benefits. But I think personally, you get into some legalities around not giving someone the opportunity to make a living past the age of 18. And I think it's actually affected the quality of college basketball. And we've seen some of that switch over to the other, you know, where you see some of these mid-major teams that have, you know, more senior-laden teams, and they're playing really well when come March time, because these guys have been in the program for 3 or 4 years. And we're still going to see the Dukes of the world and the Kansas of the world have those one-and-done players and be talented. But I'm glad to see that there are those teams that do it with players that have been there in the program for 4 or 5 years and having some of those successes that we've seen with the Butlers and the Gonzagas. I mean, I guess Gonzaga's starting to creep into some of the one and dones with their first last year with Zach Collins. But I think it's definitely the one and done debate will will continue on for the history of time. So something that we've always talked about.
Well, they're going to be that way, but the thing is, there's always going to be one and dones, even if they change the rules, because I don't think you can tell them not to go to the NBA. But it's the NBA that's really causing the one and done to be this way. They're the ones who are saying you can't come in for this time, and I wish the NBA would treat it much differently. I think it would be better for the NBA game, but this is the system we've got. This is what we're dealing with, and I think that you can't really change. But what they could change is the colleges could start giving kids more academic benefit for football and men's basketball, because it really is bringing in the money, and I think that would be a nice compromise. If you start paying them, then it's kind of, it's going to cost these programs quite a bit of money, but I think they also need to start thinking about ways they can tighten their belt and ways that they're giving money to a lot of people that aren't, that aren't actually earning the money, that's a whole nother conversation, but there's going to be people that are going to be, they're going to be disagreeing with that, but we've really covered a lot of stuff. This is a great conversation and you're a really good guest. We've only got 9 minutes left, or maybe I could stretch it a little bit to talk about the Huskies. And I really wanted to get your take on the Huskies. I know you really follow the team and I've been following him this year, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just glad that people are willing and want to talk about the Huskies. First and foremost, I think last year was for Husky fans a very difficult year to follow. I think we had all this anticipation and excitement with Markelle Fultz, and then to have him get injured, and then the team kind of go out the way they did, and then have Romar go out for as much success as he's had as a coach. But I'm just glad this year. I mean, I think there's a lot of positives to look at. I think everybody kind of thought that there wasn't much of a chance this team was going to be any good this year. I think it was a sort of first year for Hopkins to come in and kind of start setting the tone for the type of players he wants, how he wants to play. Is he going to run zone? That question's obviously been answered to the fullest extent. The way I kind of look at it, there's some positives, there's some negatives. I think positives, four players averaging in double figures is always nice to see for a team. That's, I think, surprisingly, and maybe one of the reasons why Hopkins took the job, is he's actually got several players that fit the mold of running that Syracuse 2-3 that I think fans were kind of struggling to see if that was really the right thing to do to go to 2-3. But I think if you look at the success of Thibault and Wright and Carter and some of those other players that can really get after it on the wings with their length, there's been some positives there. And then probably the biggest positive is the fact that they're averaging, a combined 15 steals and blocks per game. I mean, they've gotten those extra possessions. They've got those easy points off of some of those steals and blocks. I mean, they're leading the conference in steals by almost two full steals game, which is unheard of. I think lastly, on the positive side, is they're actually winning the games they're supposed to and finishing at the end, thank you, Jalen, for a few of those closeout games. But those are kind of the things that jump out. On the negative side, I mean, I think they still lack depth, especially at the post position. I think, Sam Timmons has gotten better, but I think they still lack some depth at that position. I think, former point guard myself, the turnover to assist ratio still bothers me quite a bit. Where it's at, it's
conversation
one to one. And then, free throw shooting is not at a great clip. Overall, I'm just glad that they're exciting to watch. They get after it on defense. I think, people that aren't familiar with the Syracuse 2-3 are starting to learn what to look for and understand where those opportunities are and getting some of those steals and be okay with some of the shots that we've given up in the middle of the key and kind of where some of those soft parts are of the zone. Overall it's been a pretty good year. I think, I think I was looking at earlier today, their RPI is, I know it's very, very early to start talking about that, but they're, still somewhere in the 60s. We'll see. The fact that they've won more games than they did last year, that's something for us to talk about.
Yeah, these are all positives, and my show, I don't know if you've listened to it before, but I've really gone over the contrary to this, to the opinions that you're discussing. You have a balanced view of the team, which is good. I personally think they're going to win 4 to 5 conference games. I think that they're one of the teams that's going to be one of the bottom teams. Right now they're at 10-3, you know. One of the top teams in the league as far as their, you know, a lot of the statistics, but I just think that the way the conference is, depth, I think that in conference play, Andrew, I think that what happens is that teams are spend a lot more time preparing for the teams than they do in non-conference. I think against certain teams, I think the zone was more effective than it might be against teams that really can prepare for it. I think the way Gonzaga carved up their zone, I mean, really in a brutally, I think is what we're going to be seeing more often than not with some of these top teams that really have really full rosters of experienced players, talent, and depth, and especially point guards. I mean, I look at a guy like Jordan McLaughlin with USC, just go right down the list. There's a lot of players that can handle the ball and make passes, and I think that the zone is not going to be as effective. But I think on the other hand, I think it's going to be a challenge for Mike Hopkins, who's a very high energy guy and a smart guy and a guy who's been around a while and done a lot of basketball. And I think that he's going to get them to fight and work harder at it. And I think over the course of the year, they're going to have some positive, they're going to yield some positive results out of it too. But again, I say that this conference is just tough. I just do. I mean, you look at Kyle Kuzma, you look at Jordan Bell, you're looking at guys who weren't even the people being talked about last year, like the Lonzo Balls and the Markelle Fultzes and blah, 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 on and on, big time. And they're dominating at the NBA level. There's so much talent at this conference year after year. And this year is no exception. I listen to people talk about the Pac-12 and how it's weak or blah, how these teams have not performed. It happens like that every year in the Pac-12, and they grind it out. Coaches like, you know, like Dana Altman, like Larry Krystowiak, Steve Alford, obviously Sean Miller down there. They're going to grind it out. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're going to be in the Sweet 16. They're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. And UW, I just don't think has the big man, the depth at big. That's going to become an Achilles heel for them. The point guard is, I'm really rooting for David Crisp. I'm hoping that he's going to be the next Justin Dentman. He's going to have a phenomenal senior year. I'm hoping the second half of his junior year is going to be kind of like Dentman's was. But he needs help. He doesn't have even one backup that I can see that's a real any kind of a
right
point at this level. And losing Carter the third was really a big loss, because I thought he had a lot of promise and could have given them some good backup minutes there in Pac-12. But when Crisp gets injured and you got Noel at the point, and that it kind of takes him out of their offensive rhythm, even though he's a great player. And I mean, 4 assists this last game. I mean, it's a tough, you know, they're going to win games. They're going to win some games against teams like Oregon State, Washington State, maybe, who are actually a pretty good team, really, but maybe not as consistent. Maybe they can get a win there. And Cal, maybe, you know, maybe a Stanford. Maybe they'll get lucky with some of these other teams too. But I'm thinking 4 to 5 wins and down there in the bottom.
Yeah,
and I think next year there'll be some improvement, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I hear you on the, coaches. There's some very, very talented, experienced coaches that know how to prepare their teams for the zone. And I think at the top 3 or 4 teams in the conference, when you're talking about the USC, Oregon, and the Arizona schools, I think those will be very difficult. I'm not totally sold on the Oregon States, the Washington States, I know Cal and Stanford have had poor first halves, but I looking at those teams, I don't know. I think they might be able to come up with more than 4 or 5 wins. But like you said, you know, it's going to come down to, they're going to need some pretty solid play from, you know, a roster that really is only going 8 deep. So you got to be, you know, very disciplined when you're on the floor, not get in foul trouble. They need to limit the turnovers. And, you know, then I think one thing that's nice is they don't have to go to Arizona this year to face either the Arizona schools on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's nice. But, you know, starting these next 3 games off on the road, I think we'll find out pretty quickly what the team's going to look like going down to the LA schools and then over to Pullman, which is obviously always a weird game. So we'll find out pretty quickly what they're going to look like when conference play gets kicked off and started here.
I agree with you. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch Husky basketball this year. For me, it's very disappointing. Unlike a lot of people, I really saw the Romar thing as a real big negative. I think talent is really what basketball is about. And I think, you know, turning their backs on bringing in Jontay Porter and Michael Porter and that whole class, and then the opportunity to also improve it in the spring and summer this last year with, you know, I mean, Michael Porter Sr. was able to get Kevin Knox to visit. He almost went to Missouri. They end up getting Tillman. I think they could have done some really good things with the school as attractive as Washington with getting even more talent in the spring. You need talent. I mean, let me ask you this. When Lewell Cinder went to the Milwaukee Bucks and brought them all the way from the worst team in the NBA to the second best team in the NBA, and then the year after that won the championship, does anybody talk about how great their coaching staff was? No, they talk about Lewell Cinder, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Michael Porter is arguably one of the best prospects to come into the game of basketball in the last 10 years. I mean, he might be the best. I mean, it's obviously all potential, but he might be the best guy since Durant. He might be the best guy since Carmelo Anthony. I mean, he's a heck of a prospect. So do you turn that down when someone's that successful? I think they should have brought those guys in, given Romar another chance. And then if he couldn't do it with that, then fine, let's fire him. But then there still would have been all this talent there for the new guy, whoever he was, to work with, as opposed to just, I mean, now we got half the talent that we could have had at UW. I shouldn't say we, because that's not the objective.
I hear what you're saying. I think that the for Husky fans, I think going 5 straight years without going to the tournament was hard to accept. And I know that there was that class was coming in. 6 straight years. Okay,
yeah, 6.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But they won the Pac-12 the first of that year.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of frustration. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think the other thing too is that one, the players that have had the hype, and I know none of the players that Washington have had sort of the opportunity that Michael Porter Jr. has presented. But you, when you think about Markelle Fultz and that how that experience went, when you think about Spencer Hawes, when you think about Tony Roten, there's not a really great taste in Husky's mouth. Fans' mouths about how these sort of top talents that are going to leave after 1 year is gone, and I agree with you that I think it would have been nice to see how things would have turned out, but I think that it was, for me, it was hard to say, okay, what's going to happen after that year and how is everything going to come together and some of those things, but we will never know.
I'm going to beg to differ. Now, this is just for the sake of a good conversation. Jontay Porter is a freshman. He's got a lot of potential. He's kind of had an up and down season this freshman year, but one thing he's got is a tremendous amount of potential, and he's a heck of a player. You know, he would have been around for a couple of years just because of his age. You know, a lot of these guys would have been there. They would have had an opportunity to even bring more guys in. I think they're in a position to really, with the network that Lorenzo Romar put together, with the local connections. I mean, UW right now is 0-5 or 0-6 on really a good recruiting class in state in 2018. I mean, I think they would have just had more talent. I think they would have brought in more talent. I think that most importantly, as far as what they would have done is, if Michael Porter, of course, he was going to be one and done, is he the same player as Tony Roten? Is he the same player as Spencer Hawes? I don't think he is. I think if you really know basketball and watch basketball, which I know you do, you saw Nathan Hale last year win the national championship with Michael and Jontay Porter and PJ Fuller, and name another guy who's a D1 guy on that team, and going up against teams like Oak Hill and beating them. I mean, Michael and Jontay Porter had a really good chemistry, and I think that people who want to say, well, it didn't work with Fultz, it didn't work with Roten, it did work with Roten. They won the Pac-12. So we can't even say that. Okay, it didn't work with Fultz, it didn't work with Hawes. It's not Jontay and Michael Porter. So honestly, I think that those guys had a chemistry that, and they still do. And I think we're going to be seeing that over the rest of the season as Michael Porter probably starts playing minutes here within the next couple, 3 weeks. So it's just, you know, it's just, I don't know what's going to be happening, but I think they would have been a lot better off with taking an opportunity like that. And then if that didn't work, then you have the perfect excuse to say, well, Lorenzo, we gave you another shot and that was that, you know. But having Michael Porter is a once in a lifetime opportunity, I thought.
Yeah, no, it's hard to pass up on that that opportunity. And I think, you know, I think he deserved to take that glass that he had built and get a shot at it. I was kind of playing, you know, devil's advocate on kind of how I've seen
talk
with some other Husky fans around on yep, round
that's
why.
That's what they say. I agree. I know. That's what they say. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it's, you know, we'll never know. And, you know, we'll just have to watch and root for those players that we're going to come here and hope that things work out for them. And, you know, and hope that Hopkins can turn this around faster than everyone's hoping, you know, thinks it's going to take.
Yeah, I think it's a good chance. I think it's a good chance that he will. He's shown some real good signs and stuff. I'm feeling a little snake bit about the whole thing with what happened with them firing Romar. I just thought it was a poor idea. So, but nonetheless, yeah, we're moving on into bigger and better things, and we'll just see what happens. But in the meantime, there's lots going on in the hoops world here in the Northwest. Anyway, I got to call it a day here. It's really been great talking to you. I'm glad we got a chance to talk, Andrew.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. And again, happy holidays to you, your family, and anybody else that's listening. And thanks again for reaching out and having me on the show.
It really was good. I really appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Thanks again for talking hoops.
Thank you.
Jim Bass tonight. And as the great Bob Robertson used to say, always be a good sport. Be a good sport always.